Welcome everyone to this session, where I'm super excited to be talking to Dr. Christiane Northrup. Firstly, thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Northrup. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Just to give people, I'm sure many, many people know who you are, but just to give people that don't a bit of your background, Dr. Christiane Northrup is a visionary pioneer in women's health and New York Times best-selling author of a number of books, including Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom, which has just been published in its fifth edition, Goddesses Never Age, The Wisdom of Menopause, and particularly Dodging Energy Vampires, which we're going to be touching on some of the ideas from in today's session.
Right.
In 2013, Reader's Digest named Dr. Northrup one of the 100 most trusted people in America. And in 2016, she was named one of Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul 100, a group of leaders who are using their voices and talents to awaken humanity. Her work has been featured on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Today Show, NBC Nightly News, The View, Rachel Ray, Good Morning America 2020, and The Dr. Oz Show. And we're very, very happy to have you, Dr. Northrup, as part of this conference.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So I'm really keen to get into the subject matter for this interview.
Right.
I spoke with Dr. Judith Orloff about her work on empaths and highly sensitive people, and some people may have not have watched that interview, so I'd like to in a minute just come into a bit about empaths, just with some kind of context. But I think this piece of energy vampires is something that everyone is going to resonate with in some way. I think we all have people in our lives which drain us and have impacted us in difficult ways. And it can be a source of trauma itself, but also I think often those that have experienced trauma can be more delicate and more sensitive. So I think this is a really, really important conversation. Maybe just to open this up, though, just to perhaps say a little bit about what empaths are and also what vampires are, just to kind of set out some of the context, and then we can use that as a foundation to come into it further.
So there are many different kinds of empaths, and it's a spectrum. And at one end is people who are just particularly sensitive to the environment, to the emotions of others. And then there is a group called those with super traits. And this group has been studied by Sandra Brown, who wrote Women Who Love Psychopaths. And it is a group whose personality is set in a certain way. They don't see the bad things about others. They have what's called low risk assessment. They don't get that someone is dangerous to them. They are very courageous, very hardworking, very loyal. Often, in women anyway, they run companies, they're doctors, lawyers, they are very upstanding citizens, and they make the mistake of thinking that the traits that they have, the super traits they have that help them be so good in their work, will work in a relationship. And they tend to be attracted to fixer-uppers. I can save him, or I can save her. And so we need to look at the general thing is about 1 in 5 people is an energy vampire. Empaths are kind of the new normal. And so what we've seen really is that the entire planet has been manipulated by the energy vampires. They're like, if you look at our financial system, so we see the pyramid, everyone down at the bottom is doing all the work and everyone up at the top is making all the money. And but in an individual relationship, they are the person who, the minute you call them out on their behavior, they might cry crocodile tears, or somehow they have what I call malignant intuition. And they're very, very good at targeting the people with the super traits, the people who believe that people are all good at heart. And that they hurt people because they themselves have been hurt in childhood. We really believe that that's the only reason why someone would act the way they do. And we give them the benefit of the doubt many, many times to our own detriment. And it's interesting to me that, you know, when I wrote this book, Dodging Energy Vampires, I'd already written a bunch of huge books on other things, but quite frankly, this is the dynamic here, the empath and the vampire, that needs to be brought to the light so that we can heal this dynamic. Now, generally what happens with an empath is they are so reluctant to detach from the vampire because we are healers and we want to do the best possible thing for people. And again, what the vampire does is it plays on that sensibility. There's a podcast going around that's very dramatic called Dirty John. And it is the story of a woman who gave this guy the benefit of the doubt. And he'd been married 4 or 5 times, good looking, always. Very often, the vampires are extraordinarily attractive, very charismatic. And so what happens is that we empaths have got to look at where we get hooked, where we give them what's called narcissistic supply. Narcissistic supply is attention, sex, money. Those are the biggies. And they're very addictive. And I believe that there's enormous trauma that is associated with waking up to the fact that, for instance, this person never loved you. If you're married to one for 30 years, they're not really capable of the kind of love that an empath is capable of. And once you call them on it, once you see it, you have to be prepared for them leaving and finding someone else within 15 minutes after you've tried, given them often your whole life. Or let's say that you have a son or a daughter who is an energy vampire. It's your own blood. And sometimes you just have to cut them off and it feels terrible. Now, people often ask, is there any way any of these vampires ever change?
Can they be cured?
Can they be cured? And I think what we have to remember is the answer needs to be no. And having said that, there are cases where in their 60s, sometimes later in life, they will have contrition and understand what they've done. But it's so rare that Sandra Brown says, I never want to tell anyone in my groups about this, because the empaths with super traits are the kind of people who will hang in there for 200 years if there's a chance that their love and their compassion and their caring, or giving them articles about whatever, spirituality, vitamin D, you know, whatever, that somehow change them. Many of us have the ability to sacrifice ourselves for years, hoping that, oh, if I give him this article, or it works the other way around too. Obviously, men are often in relationship with women vampires. Those are known as borderline personality disorder. You can't do right by them. No matter what you do, it's not enough. And the thing that's so amazing, and that I want everyone on this podcast or this session to know, is that they always appear to come out with butter side up. When their bread falls on the floor, it's always butter side up. No matter what you do, they come up smelling like a rose because they do not have the empathy that you have. And they put themselves as number one. So if you are a nurse, a doctor, a healer, an acupuncturist, a massage therapist, chances are very good that you are an empath. You went into this to heal. And these people can cause you enormous trauma until you see how they operate. And it's taken me years. In psychiatry, we call the vampire thing cluster B, personality disorder. Now, this is funny because I just saw in my medical literature a drug for narcissists. I thought, oh my God, I mean, come on. It's a personality disorder. It is not a chemical imbalance. It is not mental illness. They know what they're doing. I think this is the most important thing. They know what they're doing. George Simon, who wrote In Sheep's Clothing, said, think of a cat with a mouse. Is the cat feeling bad for the mouse? No, the cat is very excited, but they put you on the defensive, but they get excited by conflict and picking a fight and all of that, because that gets your energy. So an empath always, I believe, has to just understand their own super traits, their own triggers. So that, here's an example. You go to a party and a person who has some empathy but isn't considered an empath will have a guy come up to her and start to complain about his ex-wife, and he went through a divorce and she won't let him see the kids and all of that. Okay. A person with healthy boundaries might just say, what a loser. I don't want to go out with him. An empath with super traits will say, oh God, I think I can help you with that.
There's something in the dynamic that often I think can happen between vampires and empaths, which is sort of dysfunctionally functional in a sense, in terms of the codependency, where it's sort of in a really dysfunctional way, it's working that dynamic.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
what can make it so hard for the empath to walk away.
That's exactly right. Not to mention that when you shine your light on these people, they blow up like a balloon with narcissistic supply. So you call them on their stuff. They start to cry or blame you or do anything. Oh, I'll never do it again. Get down on their knees. And you go, oh my God, he gets it. He sees it or she sees it. And they're so good at that, that then hope springs eternal. And you go back on the cycle again, believing that they will change. And this is the golden hook that can then lead to so much trauma. And then also, you know, there's karma and there's all of that stuff. Or if you have a parent who's a narcissist, then your love object will always be trying to win the love and approval of the parent who's not capable of unconditional love. It's always about you making them look good, you know, being the good little girl or boy.
Which I think is also a really important point, that there's a, on both for vampires and for empaths, there is a familiar resonance in certain dynamics of relationship, that you can have an empath that finally sees through this vampire and calls time, walks away, and the next relationship they walk into is almost a mirror of that previous relationship, because that's what's familiar.
That is correct. So that's why you need to work on that part of things so that you will not get bamboozled again. And, you know, when you talk to women or men who've been in these relationships, I mean, sometimes I recently knew a man who, he showed me pictures of all of his past girlfriends. They were the same woman. I mean, they were literally the same woman with the same dynamic over and over and over again. So you have to heal that inside yourself. And by the way, many, many times an empath will drag a narcissist, a vampire, to couples therapy. And you need to understand that the vampires, the narcissists, are incredibly good at telling you what you want to hear. They're so good at it that it takes a very specially trained therapist who understands narcissism. And years ago, George Simon used to teach therapists how to recognize this pattern. And he said many times, a lot of therapists would walk out of the room because they couldn't deal with the fact that their view of humanity, that everyone's good at heart, that they were wounded in childhood, their view was so shattered. Because they went into therapy to, you know, to find the wounded little boy or girl.
Because they're empaths,
right. So they left. I mean, they would leave his seminars. That's not true anymore. I think we've evolved, you know, the mental health field in the 80s, people understood about recovery and addiction. And that was the thing. And then now it's understanding the vampire empath dynamic. And don't you find it interesting that there's so many popular books and television shows about vampires? You know, there's, True Blood, and I haven't seen many of them, but I read that whole Twilight series.
Yeah.
And, right. So we seem to know this as human beings. And so we need to value ourselves. What empaths do is we tend to put everyone else and their needs before our own. And over time, that drains us. So, you know, I've written obviously about the life cycles of women. And menopause, the perimenopausal time, is about the time when the chickens come home to roost. And in men, by the way, it's the same time. They just don't have the hormonal changes. It's about age 42, your Uranus opposition, where you go, wait a minute.
I've got a couple of years is what you're telling me.
That's right. That's right. But we're now, this planetary lockdown is, in my view, aided and abetted by vampires who are looking for power over people. Yeah, I think it's a global, it's the last ditch of the old order.
Interesting. And actually, yeah. To touch a bit more into some of the origins behind some of these dynamics, can you speak a little bit to the role of self-esteem and self-worth? So particularly, I think one of the things that happens in empaths is that there is a low self-esteem, which is almost propped up by this charismatic and sort of strong and powerful vampire. And it makes it, the more they get beaten down, the harder, the very kind of resource they need to walk away is being beaten out of them.
That is perfectly stated. Perfectly stated. It's that you wait your whole life if your self-esteem is low. So I'll speak from the point of view of a woman. And you think that maybe you're not really lovable. And then some handsome, charismatic guy comes along and chooses you. You think you've been chosen. You've actually been targeted. You think you've been chosen. And so, yes. And so suddenly you blow up because you have this handsome man on your arm or whatever it is, or a man has a arm candy as a woman, and you think that you've died and gone to heaven. And then little by little by little by little, your self-esteem gets eroded even more. And you can see these couples when you look around. It's often a very good-looking person, unusually good-looking and charismatic, with someone who's not like that at all. Or one of the things that you see in Hollywood is you'll see two very good-looking people together. And that's one of the reasons I think why it's axiomatic that in Hollywood someone is, you know, together and divorced and together and divorced, because there's no real solid thing there. They're just basking in the narcissistic supply that the other one gives them. It's all about image, all about image. Narcissists are very addicted to image. But if they can get somebody to meet their every need and to adore them, to constantly look at them adoringly and give them money, give them attention, give them sex, give them house cleaning, whatever it is, they're going to stay with that person. But the minute the empath begins to shore up their self-esteem, and you know, we see this in movies, it's kind of one of those themes that you see in movies. I'm thinking of Fried Green Tomatoes, when Kathy Bates in that movie finally starts to feel some self-esteem. The other one is Shirley Valentine, that classic, where the woman goes to Greece and realizes that she has value and she doesn't need to be beaten down. I think that's where we are as a planet, is understanding our value and our power as individual humans, and not so much looking outside of ourselves to what we have or the car we drive or, and that's the other thing I think is going on, a great awakening to what is really of value, and it is community. And I always say community equals immunity, because we have good studies on that. But the self-esteem, it's true, it's a lock and key. It's a lock and key. If you had fabulous self-esteem, you would probably never get very far in this relationship. Because now what, here's a good rule of thumb. 2 years, 2 years. You will see who someone is after 2 years. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that is particularly challenging when you have people which are vampire-like, or, you know, perhaps they're not the fully embodied vampire, but they're
right.
they're a bit of a narcissist and they're charismatic is they're really skilled at presenting the person that they think you want them to be, that you want them to present. And it takes time for that, because it in time it becomes impossible to maintain that image because the crack starts to appear. But it can take time, as you say, for that crack to appear. And for one, and initially if one is invested in, because it's a sort of, both parties are sort of guilty there, right? Because the empath wants to see them as being that perfect, wonderful person. So when they see the cracks, they sort of ignore them because they don't want to see them. It takes time for that to crumble.
Or they make excuses. I have a good friend who divorced a narcissist, and she said, oh my God, it is such a relief to go to, and they have children together, such a relief to go to a gathering where I'm not trying to make him look better than he actually is, you know, like to make excuses, to pump up the big man, that kind of thing. So the numbers are about 1 in 5 is this energy vampire, but about 1 in 100 is a full-on psychopath. And that's someone with no conscience at all. And they are not usually mass murderers. They're usually running Fortune 500 companies and all of that.
And there's a sort of lacking of you say lacking of conscience, it's also a lacking of empathy, right, in a sense.
Oh.
And that means that, because I think one of the points that you make here, which is really important, is that the empath feels everything. The vampire sort of feels nothing, in a sense. And so the empath just assumes, well, they must have conscience, because they're like me. On some level, this must matter to them. And it's very hard, I think, to accept that sort of truth that actually they just don't.
That's absolutely correct. And that's one of our things that we have to learn how to manage as empaths. We don't speak up often because we know how awful we would feel if somebody spoke to us that way. So we're always trying to smooth things over, make it better than it was. But it's true. Empaths often do not know where they end and the other person begins. And it's a very good practice to, when you've been with somebody, are you suddenly feeling sad? Are you suddenly feeling angry? Are you suddenly feeling sick? Because very often you're carrying the emotions of another. And this is one of the reasons why many, many healers get sick over time. You know, we have so many opportunities to learn and to clean this up. And I'm rather thrilled that the younger generation now won't have to figure this out by themselves, because, you know, with my work, Judith Orloff's work, Melanie Tonya Evans is in Australia. She runs groups for empaths who are just waking up. And it's then you find that our empathy becomes a superpower.
Yeah.
Because you then can truly help, but you have boundaries. Finally, you have those boundaries. As a little child, very often you couldn't have those boundaries, you know, because that constant being criticized or constantly being used. Let's think about somebody, let's say, who always wanted to be a world-class athlete, and then they have a child who has some athletic ability, and then their relationship from the age of 2 is that the parent is going to shine their light on the child as long as he or she wins or, you know, does well at the piano recital. That's why Carl Jung said the biggest burden to any child is the unfulfilled desires of their parents. And that's pure narcissism. That is pure narcissism. Unless, and we know this, that children are often born into a family of actors or musicians, and it's perfectly fine. But when it isn't, when it's traumatic to the child, then that's encoded as love, you see. Oh my God, I had a friend who literally said to me when I first yelled at her about something, she said, oh, now I know you love me because you're yelling at me.
Wow.
Like, what? What?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something you used a phrase a few times, which I'd love you just to unpack a little bit more, because I remember the first time that I heard it, it was so, so helpful, which is the phrase narcissistic supplies. Because I think, just to kind of to help people understand a bit more of what you mean by that, because there's a kind of, there's also a felt sense when someone's taking narcissistic supplies. You can sort of feel how, but just say a bit more about what you mean when you use that phrase.
Yeah, now I first heard that word from Sandra Brown in her book, Women Who Love Psychopaths. And then a friend who was going through a divorce, who was working with Sandra Brown, called me on the phone and said, "This is, they want narcissistic supply." Okay, so that is your energy. So just when you're starting, let's say that you're separated from one of these people, and it could just be a friendship or a sister or an aunt, because there's one in every family. So let me be clear on that. And they and they tend to mess up every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, and you know, and they're always creating conflict. So narcissistic supply is to get energy because they are utterly empty inside. So that's important to know. So they're filling up an abyss inside that only they can fill up. It's like what you said about self-esteem. We are the only people who can do that. Yes, we can do it with helpful friends who are not narcissists. So narcissistic supply is when they're picking a fight, or one of their favorite tactics is the triangulation, splitting. So we say on the psych ward at my hospital where I worked for years, you could always tell when there was a borderline on the unit because the nurses would start to fight. So this person is so charming, and you think that she's your best friend, and then she'll start to split. So that I had one in my life who actually tried to split me from my children to tell me how bad my children were so that I would pay more attention to her. And very often they're so clever and often so well educated with a PhD or whatever that they make you think, oh, maybe you're right. Maybe my children are whatever it is. And so they're splitting. Then there's sex. They're often very good at sex. Then there's image. Looking good is huge for them. That's why in families, we've said, the families who say, we don't air our dirty laundry. Oh no, we got to make sure that we look good for the Joneses. You can very often tell the families where there's a narcissist because they have a perfect Christmas card every year where they all look perfect. And money, of course, is huge.
Yeah.
They're not generous people. They like to have money given to them. They will, however, make big displays of generosity if it's being watched at, like, say, a big family reunion. They'll come in and make some grand gesture to get attention on them. And that's why they are so slippery and so tricky, because if you only see Uncle Pete at this particular time every year, and he looks so good, and he's larger than life, and he brings all these gifts for the kids, you're not going to listen to his wife who's telling you how he really is, because you've never seen that, you see. Yeah. I had a patient once, and she said, my husband would make women cry when he talked about Bruegel. He was an art professor at a big university. And then he'd come home every night and beat me. So they hide so very well because they're so skilled at knowing what you want to hear and being in the place for the most attention. So that's narcissistic supply. Yeah. It's money, it's sex, it's attention of all kinds, even bad. Talk about me good, talk about me bad, just talk about me.
Yeah. And it's that sense when your energy is being drained to feed them, right? That's the sort of felt sense of what's happening.
Well, sometimes you actually will fall asleep in your soup. I was visiting a friend once, and I didn't know that she was an energy vampire. I didn't know. Very, very famous person. And I'm there at lunch, and she had this carrot soup, and I could not keep myself awake. I'm digging my fingernails into my palms. I did her tarot cards and her astrological chart, and I wanted to lie down on the beautiful oriental rug and just sleep because the energy was so pouring into her from me in a way that most of us don't know we're doing it, because we had a parent who was like this. So we were constantly giving our energy to the parent. So it just feels normal. Yeah.
So what, I want to come a little bit to some of what people, I think you've done an exceptionally good job of kind of explaining how this works in these dynamics. I'd love to come a little bit to some of what people can start to do if they recognize they're in some of these dynamics. And something you touched on is boundaries. We have to start putting in place, you know, learning to say no. How do people, it can be so difficult to start to do that when we're so familiar, as we've sort of talked about, we're so normalized to these patterns. So how do people start to unstick themselves from these dynamics?
Well, let's say, I'll give you one that you can use in a workplace, because very often you've got one of these people in the workplace. So you do gray rock. The person comes around, they want your energy. You're a gray rock. You just literally become a gray rock. And I had a person do this and she said, I did it. It worked incredibly well, but I felt so guilty. Because you see, you know, your job as a little kid. Yeah, I felt so guilty. Here's another one. This works great. They usually only call you when they want something. So you might have friends that they never are there when you need them, but when they want something, they will call you, they will reach out. So, and they often will do this at a time when you, let's say you have planned something else. You've planned an outing for yourself or whatever. And they call and, oh my God, my moving company backed out. I really need some help packing up the house. Can you come over? Now, as an empath, you want to help. So what you have to do, you got to be prepared. And this one's called broken wing. And you drag a wing and you say, oh, I would, but I am not feeling well. They will drop you like a hot potato. If you have a need, they're gone. The dynamic is they have a need, you fulfill it. One need after another. But when you have a need, and again, if you're not on your deathbed, you'll still feel guilty. So you've got, now remember, guilt is felt in the solar plexus. That's the part of the body that where self-esteem and personal power lives in the third chakra, which also runs the digestive system, the liver and the, the stomach and that whole area of the body, which is why, by the way, a lot of empaths sort of overeat because they need an extra layer of protection. You know, some of the most skilled healers I've ever worked with have had trouble with their weight. They're trying to stay grounded on the planet. So you do the broken wing. I'm so sorry, I'm not feeling well. That will get them off your case very, very quickly. But I think the main thing we have to, then the other thing we need a group of people who see the dynamic. And by the way, you want to ask your friends what they think of this person, either at work or because your friends will tell you and you will not want to hear it. So let's be clear on that. You know, there's a part of you will go, oh, no, I know they're right. But I just can't. That sort of beginning stages where you're waking up. And so you have to have some friends you can call, like a wing woman, a sister. So I had a friend who just had me on speed dial as she's going through the divorce, and she would tell me what he just did. And I would tell her how crazy that was, because they make you doubt yourself.
Yeah.
She could never get clear information on the insurance papers and what insurance they had. And every time she'd bring it up, he would move the goalpost. I was working with a sociopath on a business idea. And every time I wanted to sit down with a lawyer and get very clear on who was going to do what the business structure would be, he would disappear. They constantly move the goalpost. And just, it's important to know that. And then, oh, and by the way, here's another worry that empaths have all the time. Oh my God, if I leave this person, he will meet another person, and then she or he will then get the person I knew who was in there, and then I will have left the best thing that ever happened, but I just couldn't quite figure out how to heal him. And what I want to do is soothe you, anyone who feels in that situation, that will never happen. They will always recreate the same situation. So in my friend who used to call me for a reality check, her husband, of course, married an heiress and everything looks really good. And now the poor heiress is starting to gain weight and she's got allergies and, you know, all of that. So it seems like it's going to be better with the next person. It's going to be the same old, same old. And you can just watch because that's what's going to happen. Now, this guy still sends her cards. He still calls her up and tries to scare her. This is the other thing. They never really go away. They will contact you 20 years later because they have no shame. They have no shame at all. They, you know, hey, how you doing? And then a little part of every empath, I'm included, will go, oh, they're thinking of me. Oh, isn't this nice? No, it's not. They're calling to see if they can get some narcissistic supply.
and sometimes what it takes for an empath to walk away from one of these dynamics is that they see it in a way they've not seen it before. And as you were saying early on, that's sometimes very painful to see because one has to sort of recognize this relationship has been damaging for decades when yes. there's always that sort of hope that it's going to get better. And it can be very, I think, very painful to sort of recognize the depth of abuse and hurt that's been caused over that many years. And it's almost can feel easier to live in denial to than to actually see that reality.
I think that that is exactly right. And I think that there are those people who actually choose to die rather than see it. It's like it is too much. There is with these people the concept of cognitive dissonance, which is so uncomfortable for people. And cognitive dissonance is in humans, we want our beliefs and our behaviors and our reality to all be consistent. So you have, let's say, a spouse who has been unloving to you for a long time, but your belief is all people are good at heart. And he's just acting like that because he was wounded in childhood. And then the cognitive dissonance is, wait a minute, that's not true. And it's so uncomfortable that you've got to do one of two things to get back into coherence. You have to decide that the person who's telling you that is wrong. They just don't know he's really a good man. So you got to just decide they're wrong. Or you have to finally say, yep, that's true. I'm just going to chalk that up to life experience. I'm human. This happened to me. This has happened to millions. Get some friends who see the pattern and can help you through it. Because by the way, for a while, you're going to have to call up a lifeline over and over and over because they make you feel crazy. I want to give you an example from my own life that was crazy in retrospect. I got a call on a Saturday night from one of my patients whose daughter was in the middle of labor at a hospital where I had no privileges. And it looked like the doctor was going to do a C-section. And my patient wanted me to call that doctor to stop her daughter's C-section. Now, here's the sick part. I actually thought of calling. Wow. Why? Because my experience as a healer, as a doctor, is that I'm very effective. But that is a boundary. That's a huge boundary violation. I didn't do it. But the fact that in my mind, I could even work it around so that that might have been a good idea, it's crazy. And that's the other thing I think all empaths have to finally learn. And I think we learn it over and over and it gets refined and refined, but it's the same doll, different dress. And that is, we cannot create in another person's life. Only they can do the creating. They choose who they're going to be with, what they're going to eat, when they are going to die. We can't figure that out for them. But people want you to, and you cannot.
And I'm mindful of time, but one other dynamic I just want to briefly ask you about here as well, which is when you have, for example, a parent, which is the empath, and the child, which is the vampire, yeah. One of the problems as well is the child will say, it's your fault. You made me this way. My pain and suffering is your fault. And that can be a very difficult dynamic for the parent to then separate from.
Very. So what you have to do, that's where tough love. So I think we can say, probably by the age of 25, You know, it used to be 18, but let's go with 25 now.
Generous. Right?
And we'll say, here's what my mother did, which I loved. Somewhere around, we were all adults. And she said, look, I've done the best that I possibly could. And I'm very sorry for what I did not know then. But you are now all adults. And it's time for you to live on your own. And that was very, very healing, because everyone really got it that this business of blaming mom was over. It needs to be over. So the parent needs to step up, be a full human and a parent, and say, I'm sorry, but from now on, I brought you into this world. I did whatever I needed to do to bring you into this world. You're here now. The cord has been clamped. You are on your own. I will see you this time. I will give you this much money, but you just wheeling in here anytime you want and taking my resources, that's over. Yeah.
I think that's, for some people needed to hear that, very, very important.
I know it is.
Dr. Northrop, thank you so much for your time. For people that want to find out more about you and your work, mm-hmm. what's the best way to do that? I know that Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom is currently in its fifth edition, being relaunched. So yeah
it's huge. Look at that. That is an encyclopedia of women's health. All right.
So
yeah, but say
a bit about what's been updated in the new version.
Yeah. Well, this is, I call this the post Me Too version. So this was, you know, after Harvey Weinstein, I felt like I could just put it right out there because I'd been seeing all of those patterns in my patients for years, but I was told that my patients were crazy. Just like anyone, a little boy who's been abused, sexually abused by the priest, if his mother's an ardent Catholic, she's going to make him wrong. Oh, Father John could never have done that to you. We're in the age of the big reveal. I call it the big wake up. So this book has all new sections on the Gardasil vaccine, the uterus, ovaries, breasts, childbirth, labor. It's all in there, one whole chapter on menopause. So that's what's in there. And I have a online women's health course, like Become Sovereign in Your Own Body, that's coming up. But drnorthrop.com, that's where you can find everything.
Awesome. Dr. Northrop, thank you so much. I really appreciate this interview. Thank you.
Thank you.